Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.
From PRI, Public Radio International, and KCRW Santa Monica, this is To the Point.
Can Fred Thompson's dramatic flair beat persistence in the race to the White House? I'm Jim Sterngold, sitting in for Warren Olney, and this is To the Point from Public Radio International, a daily look at the issues Americans care about most. Former Senator Fred Thompson has entered the presidential race months late. His campaign staff has been in turmoil, and critics question his social values. Has he found the formula for success? In his first day as an official candidate for the Republican nomination, Thompson has already dominated the headlines. Can he hold the spotlight he has so cleverly seized? On Reporter's Notebook later on, Apple's iPhone was introduced 3 months ago with enormous hype and a whopping price tag. Now, Apple has slashed the price by $200. Is this an ill omen for the electronics market? First, here's the news.
Support for To the Point comes from subscribers of KCRW Santa Monica and from the Public Radio International Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
I'm Jim Sterngold, sitting in for Warren Olney, back with To the Point from PRI. While eight Republican candidates were trudging through yet another debate in New Hampshire last night, Fred Thompson upstaged them from Los Angeles. He went on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno and announced he was running for the White House. Some experts say his announcement was big news only because the field's so weak. Does Thompson have the substance to win over conservatives? On Reporter's Notebook, after a string of slick successes, has Apple stumbled with its new iPhone? First, this news update. In a week of dark assessments about Iraq, a panel of experts has delivered more grim news, this time about the police force. A 20-member commission led by a retired Marine general found that the Iraqi army was slowly improving, but that the police force is so riddled with militias that it could not be trusted and ought to be disbanded. We have with us today Adam Graham Silverman. He is a reporter for Congressional Quarterly. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Silverman.
Thank you.
Let me ask, first of all, we've had running assessments on the capabilities of the Iraqi security forces for several years now, most of them coming from the American military. All of them have highlighted what have been major shortcomings all along. This new report, is there any situation that is getting better noticeably, and is there any grounds for optimism that you can read into this?
Well, some folks have come out and said there is. Senator John McCain, notably, after taking a look at the report, did express some optimism about the Iraqi army. About the police, though, he did say that he agreed with the recommendation that it should be dismantled and started over from scratch.
Let me ask about the practicality of that. I understand there's something on the order of 26,000 police in Iraq. How do you realistically disband them and then reformulate the police force, presumably rehiring at least some of those people, retraining and whatnot? What do you do in the interim when you don't have a police force? And what is the guarantee that you can create a new police force that doesn't have the same sectarian inclinations?
Well, I think you've hit on the broader issue there, which is that many parts of Iraq are facing the exact same problem of how to overcome the sectarian tension in order to move forward with a national government. And in terms of governing, the Bush administration now is shifting toward a more sort of focus on local approach. So you're seeing them saying, let's not focus so much on national groups. Let's build it from the ground up, province by province, city by city. So maybe that's what they can do with the police. But it will be very hard. And in the meantime, disbanding of the Iraqi army at the very beginning of the occupation is one of the most heavily criticized decisions, because it basically took a trained force and
turned some of them into insurgents, of course.
Yeah, into insurgents. They lost their jobs, and the U.S. also lost track of them. And so they could go off and join their local militias.
Does the commission report that came out, or at the hearing today, to your knowledge, was there much practical talk from the people who were on that panel about how you would go about disbanding this police force and what the smart way would be to try to reconstitute it?
To my knowledge, there wasn't a lot of detail there. I think that the report, we're going to see the report used mostly for political purposes. It's one of several we're getting this week that are painting a pretty bleak picture about various parts of Iraq, the GAO report yesterday, and as a result, next week's report from the White House with the contributions from General Petraeus, Admiral Ambassador Crocker, these key people in Iraq, there's the talk that this is going to show some progress is being undermined by these other reports and is going to raise the question that this White House report has been politicized and not the objective assessment that we've been expecting.
Well, let me ask about the politicization and the political response there in Washington to this report. Has it been predictably that Democrats have looked at this as saying the glass is half empty and Republicans are trying to say it's half full, or is it a little more nuanced, or are people basically coming to some of the same, presumably somewhat stark conclusions about the message here?
I haven't seen a lot of nuance. People are careful to praise Petraeus and Crocker and the other officials who have worked on these reports, but generally, yes, I think that each party wants to see this their own way, and there have been some small movements from a few Republicans in the House who have said yes, there is a need to do something here to either send a symbolic message by starting to withdraw a small number of troops or do something on a larger scale, but there probably aren't enough bodies moving yet that anything is going to come of it in terms of progress legislatively or policy-wise.
Now, is there anything in this commission's report that addresses the issue of whether our dollars are well spent in trying to train the Iraqi security forces? One of the big issues, of course, all along has been that we need to step up training. We need to spend more dollars to produce this reliable army in particular. Is there anything in this that says that our money is well spent or that we can spend it in a better way?
I think the criticism is that it is not and has not been. This has been a project that's been ongoing for many years now, and the lack of results has really angered a lot of people on the Hill about how the money has been spent.
Right. Well, we'll hear more about this. Thank you for joining us, Adam Graham Silverman of the Congressional Quarterly in Washington.
Thank you.
In a moment, Fred Thompson takes on the Republican presidential field with a shaky staff but great hopes. On To The Point.
To The Point thanks Factiva from Dow Jones for its use of Factiva.com. With news and information from 10,000 global sources, Factiva is a resource for companies whose continued success rests upon timely strategic news on their industry, competitors, and themselves.
I'm Jim Sterngold, back with To The Point.
And that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about.
All right. All right.
I'm running for president of the United States.
All right.
That, of course, was The Tonight Show and the introduction of Fred Thompson as a new candidate for presidency of the United States. For a moment, at least, Hollywood flair has trumped the policy wonks in the battle for the Republican presidential nomination. Fred Thompson, who was an actor and a former senator, made the late entry into the race and stole the spotlight. But now he's going to face intense scrutiny on issues like abortion and immigration. Can Thompson go from his recent sprint to the long slog to the White House? Our first guest is Mike Allen. He's the chief political writer for the Politico website in Washington. Welcome to the show, Mr. Allen.
Well, howdy.
First of all, there's a lot of attention being lavished on Thompson, of course. He really has stolen the show, at least momentarily, with charisma. Does this say more about his strengths, or really does this speak to the weakness of the Republican field?
Well, of course, those aren't mutually exclusive, but you're right that a key part of his appeal is the star, is the charm and star power. Those, of course, are very important qualities in politics or in broadcasting, I guess. But how far will they take him? That's the big question. Fred Thompson really has jumped into the deep end here because he basically has a three-week campaign within a campaign where he has got to perform. He waited until now after telling Fox originally that he was going to be in the debate last night. He, of course, stiffed them. And now he's looking at a hard deadline of September 30th when he's going to have to show how much money he raised.
Right. He has to report on this critical figure of what he's raising, which presumably tells us how credible he is.
Right. And his money was so weak before, and they said, well, there's this pent-up demand, and when he's really a candidate, people will come forth, and so forth. And that could all be true, but if there's not a good number, then he will not be taken seriously by donors and other people who matter. Now, I think there's a significant case to be made for Fred Thompson. I'm sure you saw all or part of the announcement video that he did. And in there,
this was on his website where he made this official announcement, right?
Yeah, he's done it a variety of places. It's on all different websites. I guess you can probably get it on his, too. Also was on broadcast and cable TV this morning. And one of the points that he makes in there is a sort of dual appeal. A, that the danger of Islamic terrorism and saying that we've become a little complacent about the danger of terrorism, and that's allowed partisanship to creep back in, a sort of partisanship that we can't really afford. And his second point is that things are also sort of off the tracks domestically, and this is where you're going to hear some very ambitious proposals from him, even on trying to change Social Security, which is very difficult to do. I talked to some social conservatives today who just have not been able to find someone that they could stomach, and they really liked this terrorism message. So,
well, let me ask you about that in terms of who's listening. Now, there's been tremendous hoopla, and of course, Thompson got this attention because he followed in the footsteps of Arnold Schwarzenegger by going on the Jay Leno show. But Schwarzenegger was not running in a primary. He was running in a general election. It was a recall election, of course, at the time. Now, Thompson has gotten lots of headlines sort of in the mainstream media and getting popular attention broadly. But how are the Republicans themselves responding? Do they like him by holding their noses because they find him ill-suited in some respects, or do they really embrace him?
Yeah, I think a lot of polls still show that none of the above is the sort of favorite candidate, and Fred Thompson has been first or second in some polls of Republicans. But I can tell you that a lot of the excitement about Senator Thompson has dissipated. He's a little like the cute girl that you chase and chase and chase, and finally you're like, you know, I'm just not that interested in her. And you can remember in March, April, all the buzz about the Fredheads and all the online excitement, and the press was excited to cover him. And I think at the time I sort of bought his theory, which was, you remember Newt Gingrich saying, we're going to be sick of these candidates. We're just going to want to vote them off the island. And so we might like the idea of somebody that we weren't tired of. But some unfolded a little differently. And as your listeners have seen along the way, both Mitt Romney and Rudy Giuliani have become more plausible, more credible, smoother as candidates.
Well, let me ask you about those other candidates, because the question that's been asked for a long time regarding Thompson is which Republican has most to fear from Thompson. I'd like to turn that around and say, which candidate is the potential biggest threat to Thompson? In other words, once he is in the debates like we had last night in New Hampshire, once he is going head-to-head with Giuliani, Romney, et cetera, who is the biggest threat? What is Thompson's biggest nightmare?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. I haven't really thought about it that way. I will say that I think Fred Thompson is his own threat, in that I think he's more likely to sink because of some of the factors that you and I have talked about than Mitt Romney or Rudy Giuliani going to take him out. But he got a little taste of what's coming last night in the debate, where the first question was about him, and every one of the candidates took a little shot at him. And some of them were kind of funny. Senator McCain said, well, he's probably not here because it's past his bedtime. So it was a chance for Senator McCain to joke about somebody else's age. And Mitt Romney said, what's his hurry? So why doesn't he stay out a little while longer? And Rudy Giuliani said, he's done a great job playing my part in Law and Order. So you can see that they're anxious to go after him. A very unique dynamic and something that shows the potential strength of Fred Thompson is that Democrats also are attacking him. When he travels somewhere, the Democratic National Committee puts out a press release about lobbyist Fred Thompson coming to town. So,
well, there's nothing that energizes a campaign, of course, than like having a common enemy to attack.
No, I think that's a good point. But you add these up for Fred Thompson, and you add to it the press, which has gotten tired of this striptease over when he's going to announce, and you have a campaign that doesn't get the honeymoon that you normally might not. The anti-Thompson blitz is going to start right away. Now, if he's strong and stands up to it, it's going to mean that he's going to deserve to do well, and he's potentially going to be a very strong candidate. His campaign has polling showing that people want someone who seems honest and candid. And it's sort of a subset, right, of not liking Washington, wanting an outsider.
The so-called outsider thing. Let me try to get a little bit more, though, on Thompson's strength and weaknesses. Our next guest is David Bossie. He's president of a conservative group called Citizens United, and he's a Thompson supporter, as I understand. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Bossie.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Let me throw that same question to you that I just asked of the previous guest, which is, Thompson, of course, does have a certain amount of charisma. He certainly has entered the race in a big way. He has the spotlight for a moment anyway. But what is his biggest nightmare? The question has often been asked, who is Thompson threatened in the Republican field? Who threatens Thompson the most, in your view, in the Republican field?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. The reality is that if Fred Thompson does his job, if Fred Thompson is able to energize the conservative party base, the conservative base within the Republican Party, he's going to be able to win this thing. And I don't know that a Rudy Giuliani or Mitt Romney can take him on. If John McCain's numbers are the same at the end of September that they were before in the last quarter, he's really going to be in trouble. And I agree that Fred Thompson's money is going to be very, very closely looked at, and that'll be a degree of his credibility at the end of this month. But Fred Thompson has a wide open field, and I'm not so sure if he
does that get at the question of the. Does that get to the question I asked earlier about the weak field? I mean, do you see this basically as a weak field that's yearning, in effect, for someone to take charge?
Well, I think there was a poll that I saw, and maybe if somebody else on the call can correct me, but I believe that there was 71% of those polled in New Hampshire in the latest poll said they were undecided. 71% of Republican primary voters. Now, that's everything you need to know, and if that holds up across the country even closely, Fred Thompson has an open opportunity. It's all about Fred Thompson taking that opportunity and making the most of it.
Well, let me ask about taking the opportunity. He has this bus tour that, as I understand, he's about to take to try to really get things rolling, and his brief slogan is security, unity, prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
That's on the face of it, of course, that's pretty generic, and it doesn't really have a lot of oomph to it. Is he going to go beyond that kind of generic flag waving, or do you see him really hitting hard and having some very specific detailed policies that are going to win Republicans over?
Well, I think he needs to find a very much a middle ground there. I think he needs to do more than the flag waving, but I don't know that he needs to get into the weeds of exact policy positions on every, you know, down into the minutiae. I do believe he has to show the beef. I think he has to show what he's about, what he stands for, who he is, and why people should support him. I think he's a long way down that road already. I think he's prepared now to do these town hall meetings. One of the things he has going in his favor is he connects with people. People genuinely like him. He kind of comes across as a big teddy bear guy. People genuinely like him when they meet him one-on-one. He has a gift of language, much like Ronald Reagan had. He talks with people.
But in the war on terror, do we want a cuddly teddy bear, or do we want a shark?
Well, I think we need somebody who's going to defend America first and at all costs, and I think that Fred Thompson fits that bill. Look, he's a comparison to President Reagan, not that Fred Thompson makes it, but I think in the context of what we're talking about here is he's a peace through strength. If you listen to what Fred Thompson says about Iraq as a battlefield in the war on terror, a front, not the war, but a front in the war, and you look at how Ronald Reagan dealt with the former Soviet Union in a peace through strength position, I think that Fred Thompson comes out that same way.
Well, let me ask about the thought that you mentioned about finding the middle ground. I want to throw that to our next guest. It's Richard Viguerie. He's a longtime conservative activist and chairman of American Target Advertising and author of a book which has been very critical of the George Bush presidency. Welcome to the show, Mr. Viguerie.
Good to be with you, Jim.
You're identified with the so-called core or the base of the Republican Party, the conservative right. You just heard Mr. Bossie use this expression, middle ground, that Fred Thompson's strength is that he'll presumably be able to find this middle ground. But is that what you want to see, or is that what the base and the conservative side of the party wants, middle ground?
Well, not at all, although I did agree with the thrust, I think, of my friend David Bossie's comments there, that the opportunity is really Fred Thompson's. He's got kind of an open field here because, as we all know, Republican voters, particularly the conservative ones, are very unhappy with what they've seen so far. So Thompson's, to a large extent, in charge of his destiny. I think he's waited too long. I mean, for, gosh, going on maybe 5 months now, we haven't seen a lot there. I've heard him speak here and there and some generalities and some stuff about the Declaration of Independence and Mr. Jefferson. But we really need more than that because he did not distinguish himself as a conservative leader when he was in the Senate for 8 years, nor before that or after that.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about. I mean, we already pretty much know, I believe, Fred Thompson's positions on issues like the war, on abortion, on a number of social issues and whatnot. So what we're going to learn, presumably, in the weeks ahead is how he stands up to the scrutiny and wear and tear of a campaign. But I'm guessing we're not going to learn a heck of a lot more about his basic positions. So based on what you know, and you, as you just said, you've obviously studied his positions in the Senate, is he going to persuade you with policy explanations, or is he going to persuade you with charisma?
Well, certainly he's not going to persuade me or any conservative that I know of with charisma. We've long since gone beyond that. We've been fooled too many times by the Richard Nixons, Jerry Ford, George Bushes, and we really want somebody who's going to govern as a conservative. We're kind of looking at these candidates, Jim, from the standpoint of, say, of how we looked at Barry Goldwater, who became Barry Goldwater because he stood up in the late 50s, early 60s, and spoke truth to power. He told the Republicans they were wrong on this issue, wrong on that issue. He said Eisenhower was running a dime store New Deal, and electrified conservatives by speaking to our issues and providing leadership. And Ronald Reagan walked with conservatives. By the way, Reagan also was critical of Ford and Nixon, but we never saw Reagan in the 60s in the 70s, and we saw him a lot, that we didn't see our friends all around him. We would see regularly Ed Meese and Dick Allen and, you know, those who were going to govern in
the
White House.
So you judge a man by the company he keeps, in effect.
Tell me who you walk with, Jim, and I'll tell you who you are. And conservatives do not walk with Fred Thompson. Fred Thompson walks with those we've battled all of our political life. Howard Baker, Lamar Alexander.
Let me ask a question about precisely what you're addressing, which is who he walks with. He has been identified with a number of more pro-choice leanings on the abortion question. Can you live with that? And is your view that he's pro-life or pro-choice?
Of course not. Conservatives, are very strong in the pro-life field. We want somebody that's going to be a social conservative, which is one reason why I think Thompson's only true opponent at this point in time is Mitt Romney. I think there's a ceiling on votes that McCain has already reached, and he's dropping from that. And Giuliani, because he is a social liberal, is not able to go any higher. So it's probably a two-man race at this point between Romney and Thompson.
We're going to take a brief break here, Mr. Vriggory. Please stay with us. We'll continue this conversation on the presidential race soon on Reporter's Notebook later on. Apple cuts iPhone prices but expands its virtual music store with Starbucks. We'll be back in a minute with To the Point from PRI.
A complete archive of past programs is available online at kcrw.com/to the point. You can also order a CD copy by calling 1-888-600-5279.
I'm Jim Sterngold, sitting in for Warren Olney today on To the Point. We're talking about the Republicans and whether a charismatic actor can help them hold on to the White House.
I like Fred a lot. I think Fred is a really, really good man. I think he's done a pretty good job of playing my part on Law and Order. I personally prefer the real thing, but I think Fred will add something to this race.
That was Rudolph Giuliani, of course, speaking at the Republican presidential candidates debate last night in New Hampshire. And it was just a foretaste of the kind of criticism, backhanded and otherwise, that Fred Thompson is probably going to get. I want to go to our next guest to ask about how much Thompson can stand up to that kind of wear and tear. He's John Geer. He's a professor of political science at Vanderbilt University, and he's followed Fred Thompson's career for a long time. Welcome to the show, Mr. Geer.
Thank you for having me.
Let me ask you about how Fred Thompson does, from your observations, when he's on the campaign trail and he has to deal with people taking cracks at him, either amusing ones like that or presumably more serious ones that might relate to his positions on abortion or other hard issues. Is he good on his feet, or does he wilt under pressure?
Well, I mean, first of all indications are that he does not wilt under pressure, but the pressure cooker of the presidential campaign is very different than what he faced in the Senate. But he has a style. He's kind of this country lawyer, and that's his image. And he's not going to be nasty to people. He'll be able to deflect some of the criticism. I mean, in that way, he does have some overlap with Ronald Reagan, who was able to deflect concerns. I mean, this is somebody who has a good sense of the camera, good sense of the audience that he's dealing with. You know, the fact they took all these shots at him last night, you know, underscores that Fred Thompson's entrance into the race changes it in some fundamental ways.
If he were standing on that rostrum last night and Giuliani had made that crack, how would he have responded? Is he good in those kind of situations? Can he get into the repartee and give as good as he gets?
Well, I think he can. I mean, he certainly has in the past, but he hasn't done it for a while. And so, you know, how much rust is going to be on there? And of course, one possibility for the delay that he's taken is that he wanted to hone those skills and get that back before he just went out on the stage and let somebody like a Giuliani or a McCain skewer him. And so I think he's going to be quite formidable. I mean, the real question he's got to deal with is, you know, does he have the fire in his belly and can he rally conservatives? And there's this hole in the Republican field, and, you know, he could run through it, but he's got to want it pretty bad. And
what is your observation of that? I mean, he served in the Senate, but not for very long. He got out in 2002 after, I think it was about 8 years.
Right.
So this wasn't like a lifelong ambition that he was going to cling to for all he's worth. What is your sense of his real driving passion, and what does motivate him, and is he going to be motivated to stick with this?
Well, I think he will be motivated to stick with it, but he got out of politics in 2002. He had a tragedy. His daughter died, and so he stepped aside, partly tied to that. He's also somebody who has not always been ambitious in the sense that he hasn't craved and coveted being president. So a lot of times people have this notion that Fred Thompson's lazy, and I think that's really misplaced. I mean, this is a man who's had a lot of success in his career, and he certainly can't be lazy, but being lazy and really wanting to be president, you know, they're not exactly the same thing. So is he willing to work hard and to do what's necessary? And he's certainly taking an unorthodox approach. I mean, going on Leno and announcing there rather than the kind of more traditional ways that people are doing it, delaying it. I mean, he's really trying to do something different. And if, in fact, he succeeds, of course, it'll be the new way to do it because everybody will follow his...
Does he do well without a script? In other words, he's obviously an actor, and so he knows how to read his lines extremely well. But when you've seen him on the campaign trail or in situations where he's challenged and he has to respond quickly, does he do well?
Well, he has at times done well, and other times he hasn't done as well. I think he is probably on average better with a script. In fact, all the candidates are. I mean, those lines that they all produce to take their little swipes at the Senator Thompson was certainly planned, and so a lot of politics is already scripted. But, we'll see. I mean, the light shines so much brighter when you want to sit behind that big desk, and that's what he's now announced that he wants to sit.
Well, let me take that to our next guest to ask about that question of the broader field and his impact. I want to introduce Ann Stone. She's National Chair of the Republicans for Choice. Welcome to the show, Ms. Stone.
Thank you for having me, Jim.
Now, if I understand correctly, you've been backing Rudolph Giuliani, so you don't come into this as a Thompson supporter necessarily. What does he do to the race? I mean, there's all this talk about charisma and whatnot. If anything, Giuliani is more about substance, and his charisma is more that he's pugnacious, and he'll come right at you if he's ever confronted. What does Thompson bring to the race, and in your view, what are his weaknesses?
Well, I want to answer one of the questions you asked earlier that nobody actually answered for you, and that was who is going to have the greatest impact on him, and I think it is Mitt Romney. Romney, mainly because he is positioning himself exactly in the position that Thompson would like to be as the conservative that can win, and he has the money advantage, and money is going to be a big factor as to what is going to drive the next few months. This next filing for Thompson showing that, you know, his fundraising has picked up after his announcement is going to be absolutely critical to make or break his campaign. We could see a campaign over by December 31st if his money does not improve.
Let me go back to Mr. Viguerie. He's a conservative activist and chairman of American Target Advertising, because I want to get a sense of much of the money in these races comes from the base, the hardcore Republican conservatives. In your view, are they going to fund Thompson? Are they going to run away from him because of concerns over issues like abortion? In other words, are they going to give him a chance to keep this race close?
Well, there's a difference between giving someone a chance and financially supporting the campaign. I don't see conservatives financially getting involved in any serious way with any of the top four candidates. None of the top four candidates were there, Jim, when conservatives desperately needed leadership in the last 10 years as George Bush and the other big government Republicans massively expanded government. So we're kind of in a wait-and-see attitude here, and a lot of rhetoric, quite frankly, is not going to cut it. People are not going to contribute money simply because somebody makes a nice speech about the founding fathers. I think what we're going to be looking for is, what type of president are you going to be? Where's the personnel going to come from? Who's going to be your vice president? Who's going to be your chief of staff? What kind of judges are you going to appoint? Who's going to be your cabinet officers? Where's some real beef there? You know, politicians will say anything when they're looking for votes, and we know that as conservatives, and all Americans know that. So there's got to be something more substantive than just some nice, flowery speeches. We're looking for some substance.
Let me then take that to the Thompson supporter with us today, David Bossy, president of Citizens United. How does Thompson get around this notion that he really may not appeal to the conservatives on the right, and that may harm both his fundraising and the kind of support that he gets in the primaries, where it's really the true believers who turn out?
Oh, I think that Fred Thompson is going to energize the conservative base. I think that's what I was saying earlier, is that Fred is the answer that the conservative base is looking for. And I think that Mitt Romney's...
Even if the conservative base doesn't say that themselves.
I think they do. And I think that you see, and will continue to see, now that he's an official candidate, the polling will support this over the next coming weeks and months. Clearly, and I think Ann makes a very good point about the money. He has to raise the money. And I think over the next 24 days, which is what he has in this particular cycle that ends on at the end of September, he's going to have to raise substantial money and show that he's a real candidate. I don't think he has to raise as much as people think or as much as maybe the other candidates are, because he is going to do it in an unconventional way. But the conservative base of this party, of the Republican Party, is looking for a candidate. I think they are going to very much like what they see in Fred Thompson from a Federalist standpoint, from a pro-life standpoint. He says he is pro-life. He is pro-Second Amendment. He is a pro-gun NRA supporter. Those are the types of issues that conservatives want to hear. I agree with Richard Viguerie 100%. Who you walk with is vital to getting conservative base support, and he has to show that he has and is willing to be seen with conservatives. People like Richard Viguerie and David Keene and a lot of other conservative leaders like myself are going to be looking very closely at that. I am with Fred Thompson. I personally support Fred Thompson. I think he is
Viguerie. He's with us on this. Mr. Viguerie, I mean, what he seems to be hinting at, if I understand correctly, is, do you want to win and hold on to the White House, or do you want to hold on to your principles? You may not be able to have both.
Well, we don't know. It's not the issue right now. Right now, we're 15 months away from the election, and we need to be focused right now, in my opinion, not so much on the presidential election, but relaunching the conservative movement. The conservative movement's seen a lot better days now, and we've been betrayed, as I point out in my book, Conservatives Betrayed. We've been betrayed by the Republican leaders in Congress and in the White House, and so we're looking to see who's going to stand with us on principle. Fred Thompson, I'm afraid, is a longtime Washington insider, trial attorney, and if he's going to want conservative support, he's going to have to do something that's going to say, this 30 years of my history of being a Washington insider is not who I am. If I'm president, if you entrust me with the presidency, I promise you I will govern as a conservative. We've heard that from George Bush the 41st, the 43rd, Nixon and Ford, and we're kind of jaundiced right now. So we really want to see something of substance that would prove to us you really will keep your promise when so many before you failed.
Well, let me take that that issue to our guest, Ann Stone, the national chair of the Republicans for Choice. Let me just ask you plainly, in your view and the view of your organization, is Fred Thompson pro-choice or pro-life when it comes to abortion?
Very interesting.
interesting. When we polled our members, of course, Giuliani won. Fred Thompson was their second choice. And they see him as what's called mixed choice, that he may be personally opposed to abortion, but won't necessarily go to the extremes that some of the others will go to. But, Jim, you know what? We're missing really the big picture in all of this. When Richard talks about conservatives are looking for these principles and who he walks with, and David's talking about, you know, Thompson and his principles and all this, bottom line, conservatives desperately want to make sure that Hillary Clinton is never president. In the end, they're going to go with whoever can stop Hillary. Right now, the polls show Giuliani's the first person. Thompson also has a shot. The others fall way below that.
Let me ask you this. That is an interesting point, which I've heard, and you make it quite strongly. But why would the Republicans let their race be shaped by the other party?
Because Hillary Clinton, unlike a lot of the liberal demagogues, actually believes the stuff that she's talking about. She's actually going to push a very aggressive agenda and could probably do more to shape this country for the next, you know, couple of decades way to the left. She would put everything behind it. She actually believes what she's saying. You know,
you make that sound like that's a rarity in politics and something to run away from.
Well, it is on the left. The left, you know, they're sort of shapeshifters, and they'll go, you know, they can be pushed around by the polls. She's
not on the right. People on the right aren't influenced by the polls?
Not as much. You hear it today. I mean, principle is a big part of what people on the right are. You know, they tend to stand up a little bit more. So therefore, the conservatives, I think, rightly do fear what Hillary would do from their perspective. So from that standpoint, I think more and more that is going to shape the race, and it's going to be a matter of who can stop Hillary. That's why Giuliani is strong, even among a lot of conservatives, because they believe he poses the best threat to Hillary.
Well, let me go back to David Bossie then. First of all, how much, if at all, do you agree that what might happen on the Democratic side should dominate the choice made on the Republican side?
I'm with Richard Viguerie on this. I want to support, and I do support, a candidate in every election that is a conservative first, a principled conservative first as a Republican nominee for the House of Representatives, for the U.S. Senate, or for president. And that is why I support Fred Thompson. Clearly, the nominee or the potential nominee for the Democratic Party happens to be this election cycle, Hillary Clinton. And that just makes every Republican in the country nervous because we remember the disrepair. Our intelligence services, our military, and lots of other issues were left in at the end of the first two Clinton administrations. So I think going back to that energizes the Republican Party.
But this raises the question. This raises the question, Mr. Bossie. I mean, we don't have a Democratic supporter on our show today to defend the Clinton administration. But if indeed you are basically having a beat Hillary strategy on the Republican side, what happens if Senator Obama, let's say, wins the nomination?
Well, I think whoever the Republican nominee is needs to clearly define their conservative vision, their conservative principles for America, and outline for the American people, the American voters, exactly what the liberal nominee would do for America. And I think that the Republican will win overwhelmingly, because I think the country, even though we have these back and forth, the pendulum goes back and forth, I think America, the American people, still want strength and still need to win this war. And I think that a Republican will still have the edge in this coming November's election.
Mr. Viguerie, should the Republicans be running an anti-Hillary campaign, or should they be running a pro-values campaign?
Jim, I could not disagree with my friend Ann Stone any more strongly. This is a failed philosophy of the Republicans for the 50 years I've been in politics. The Republican establishment figures regularly say, oh, those conservatives have nowhere else to go. They are so concerned about electing a Lyndon Johnson or a Bill Clinton or Jimmy Carter. They've got nowhere else to go. That's a failed philosophy. It failed in 1948 with Tom Dewey, Nixon in 60, 74, 76, 92, 06. We heard Karl Rove say ad nauseum the conservatives would turn out. They would not turn over the Congress to the Democrats. The Republicans just don't get it. Conservatives and the American people have strongly held beliefs and principles, and you cannot scare us into going to the polls. You have to give us something principle, as Ronald Reagan did, and we will turn out in droves. But when you try to scare us with a big government Republican, because the alternative is even worse, be good little boys and girls and go to the polls or the boogeyman is going to get you. That has failed for 50 years.
Let me go to Mr. Geer, a political science professor at Vanderbilt University who's been following Fred Thompson for many years. From what you've seen of him on the campaign trail and what we've heard from him in recent months, is he the kind of guy who can really galvanize both sides of the spectrum? Or when he talks about issues, is he really appealing to one fragment of the Republican Party?
Well, I think that's Thompson's particular strength, is that he, as compared to the other top-tier candidates, he's the one who would not alienate any part of the base in any substantial way. Giuliani certainly would. Romney potentially could. McCain does as well. Thompson's a much better fit, and I think that that's part of his appeal, and he's got to take advantage of this opportunity and really push pretty hard. I think the argument earlier about the turnout of conservatives or not turnout, so conservatives turned out in droves in 2004 and reelected President Bush, so that they will in fact turn out, and President Bush is not, he's a big government conservative, some people refer to him, and partly the reason for that turnout was the fear that John Kerry would be president. And you'll have the same mechanism of thought with Hillary Clinton if she were to be the nominee. So I think right now the Republicans need to battle among themselves to figure out who's the best candidate. This process will vet the contenders. And remember that this process is so unstable because you have Republicans evaluating fellow Republicans. You don't have that anchor of partisanship that shapes things. And the difference is between a Giuliani on a lot of the issues and of Thompson on a lot of the issues aren't great. There are differences on social issues, but a lot of the key issues there aren't. And with the, kind of without that anchor of partisanship, people's preferences will move. And you could see Giuliani fall 10 points in 1 week. You could see Thompson go up 15. You could see McCain go up 15. What? It's a very fluid process at this point.
It's fluid, and we'll be following it closely. We're going to have to take a break here. I want to thank all of our guests. We had Mike Allen, who's the chief political writer for Politico, the website; John Geer, professor of political science at Vanderbilt University; David Bossie, president of Citizens United, a Washington-based conservative group; Richard Vigory, who's a chairman of American Target Advertising; and Ann Stone, national chair of Republicans for Choice. Apple's stock price tumbled following an iPhone price cut, but is there more to the news? More in a moment with To the Point.
For more information about To The Point or to sign up for the free podcast, visit kcrw.com/To The Point.
I'm Jim Sterngold, sitting in for Warren Olney, back with Reporter's Notebook on To The Point. Few gadgets have received as much hype as Apple's iPhone. It was offered in June at a top price of $599, but that only seemed to make buyers more eager. People lined up for hours to buy the cellular phone. Now, Apple has slashed $200 from the iPhone price, and analysts said it looked like a sign of trouble. Has Steve Jobs got more up his sleeve? We're joined now by Joel Johnson of BoingBoing.net, who covers these kinds of gadgets. He also happens to be talking to us from his $600 iPhone. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, I can't avoid asking the most obvious first question, which is, do you feel angry that you paid full price for this phone?
I wouldn't quite say angry. It is a little bit of a kick in the teeth, considering that the phone is only, 2 months old now? So, that's not the best thing in the world. But you also, I bought mine the day after they came out, and I, when you go drop that amount of money on something that quickly after it comes out, you kind of know you're probably going to get screwed somehow.
Well, let me ask quickly, once the sort of initial novelty wore off and presumably you impressed all your friends that you had this fancy new gadget, it does seem to have a great interface. It's easy to use, it seems, and it has this wonderful way of you can slide your finger across the screen and move around the data. Once you've kind of got the hang of it and see it, is it much better than a regular cell phone, or is this really a tremendous advance over the ordinary handheld device?
It definitely has some shortcomings, you know, not being able to install your own software on it without using a third-party hack, and some things like that can be a little hairy. But on the whole, it's still probably the best phone I've ever used, and I hate to give it that glowing of an endorsement, but it's pretty amazing.
Now, I saw some comments that Steve Jobs made about the reduction in price, and he tried, of course, to put this in the most positive light, and he said something to the effect, if I understand correctly, that this was really to help prepare them for the Christmas season, and that this was going to help them sell more phones, and it wasn't being done because they were not meeting their sales projections. Do you buy any of that, or is this just basically a move that was made out of fear, and they're desperate to try to get sales up?
It's really hard to say completely. The one thing that I think you have to keep in mind is they also introduced the iPod Touch yesterday, which was basically the iPhone without any of the phone stuff in it. It's just an iPod.
Well, that's a catchy marketing phrase. The first phone that's not a phone.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure that's going right up there. But it's so it would have been kind of hard for them to go, well, we've got this phone and it's the premium thing, but we've got this, but it's kind of difficult for people to buy because they have to switch to AT&T and go through all this trouble to get it. But we also have this iPod that does 95% of what our phone does, but it's $400 instead of $600. So I think part of this is trying to bring their top-end iPod in line with the top-end phone so people really kind of have to make a choice or can make a choice, I guess, in between the two rather than, there being one clear value proposition and then the other one just kind of becomes useless.
I want to ask about the partnership with Starbucks, which really seemed like a potentially interesting increase in the whole iStore approach that Apple has of buying music over the internet. In this case, you would have a wireless connection to Starbucks. But let me ask, first of all, a little historical analogy here. Is this basically the Sony Walkman all over again? Sony basically invented that market. They had a tremendous advantage for a number of years, and then boom, they lost everything. They made a fortune on it, but then the competitors caught up and passed them. Is this going to be like that, or is this really a different situation?
Well, it's kind of two different things. As far as the iPod is concerned, Apple's pretty much won. I mean, they're completely dominant in music players. Now, at some point, and people have predicted this forever, but it will eventually happen. It just takes a long time. Eventually, phones will completely supplant MP3 players. It'll all just be crammed into one device, and clearly, that's where they're going with the iPhone. So it's kind of hard to say, well, this is where they first screwed up, and now they're going to be doomed. I don't think that's fair to say at all. I really think it's more, we're kind of seeing Apple in a strange transition period now because they know that the iPod will eventually be obsolete, and we all know the iPod will be eventually obsolete, but they still have to make money for the next few years while that all happens.
I mean, are we moving toward a market, and I don't know whether we're talking about 2 years away or 5 years away, are all the things that we hold in our hand, are they going to be one device and everybody's going to be competing with the same market with just different products? In other words, are we going to have Blackberries, sidecars, cell phones, music players? Are we basically going to have one device in our hand that is going to do all of those things with massive memory?
Well, we will, but it'll be just like it is now, which is, every time something new gets invented that has greater capabilities, it's almost always, it's an individual item. So, 10 years ago, the idea of having a camera in your phone was ridiculous, and now they all have cameras. But you still go out and buy an extra nice camera if you want to take extra nice pictures. So it's going to continue to be like that. Like, the really high-quality products, like the top end of whatever market segment, are still going to be discrete devices, I'm sure. But eventually, more and more things will kind of be thrown into these gadgets that everybody, that has a little bit of everything, GPS and phones. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you about the expansion of the opportunities to buy music that they announced yesterday in this partnership with Starbucks. If I understand correctly, consumers are going to be able to buy music over wireless connections. They're going to be available exclusively at Starbucks stores. Is this a better deal for Apple than Starbucks or Starbucks than Apple?
Well, there's two things that were announced yesterday, and they're related, but the first is the iTunes Wi-Fi music store. I think that's what they're calling it. And basically, it's the same as iTunes that you use on your computer, but instead of downloading music from the internet to your computer and then copying it over to your iPhone or your iPod, you'll be able to go right online over Wi-Fi with your device and buy music over the air. And that's whether you're in Starbucks or anywhere that you've got a good internet connection over Wi-Fi. The Starbucks thing is more specifically when you're in a Starbucks and you're connected to the Starbucks Wi-Fi, they've got a little trigger in there that makes a button show up, and if you're listening to a song and that's on the Starbucks radio, it'll put it on your iPhone and say, hey, you know, this just played, do you want to buy it? So that I actually think in broadly, it's not really the specific iPod or the specific iTunes Starbucks deal isn't that big of a deal. Like, I think some people will use it and it'll be cute and, you know, it'll be fun, but I don't think it's like a huge sales play for either company, although I think it's, you know, great marketing. What I think is indicative and more important is the fact that the capability to do this will allow Apple to make partnerships with lots of different companies to do lots of different over-the-air downloads at their stores. So you end up getting stuff like, you know, come into Barnes & Noble, and if you buy a book, you can download the audiobook version for free, or, you know, come into this store and you know, come into Starbucks, buy a coffee, and, you know, get a free download. So there's a lot of interesting stuff that happens that way.
Well, we'll be watching this more. I want to thank our guest for being with us. That was Joel Johnson of BoingBoingNet. He was live on his $599 iPhone from Brooklyn, New York. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks.
Today's program was produced by Katie Cooper with Francis Anderton and Dan Konecki. The technical director is Mike Newport. I'm Jim Sterngold, sitting in for Warren Olney. Join us again for To the Point, produced live and podcast as a co-production of KCRW Santa Monica and Public Radio International.
Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.